You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Tonight, thousands of kids all across Canada will dress up in costume with empty bags and pillowcases in hand. They'll speed from house to house, collecting as many sugary treats as they can carry. For kids, getting free goodies makes this one of the most exciting nights of the year. But this tradition is also related to a very important issue in healthcare today: childhood nutrition and obesity. Rates of childhood obesity in Canada have almost tripled in the past 25 years. According to the Childhood Obesity Foundation of Canada, approximately 26% of children ages 2 to 17 are currently overweight or obese. These rates continue to increase into adulthood. This brings significant costs not only to the families and individuals struggling with obesity, but also to the Canadian healthcare system. Today on Health Justice Radio, we'll be speaking with Dr. Catherine Morrison, a pediatric endocrinologist and associate professor at McMaster University. She is the director of the Metabolism, Obesity, and Health Program in the Children's Exercise and Nutrition Center at the McMaster Children's Hospital. She was on the steering committee for the development of the Canadian Clinical Practice Guideline for the Prevention and Management of Obesity in Adults and Children. Her current research interests include obesity and cardiometabolic health in children. So, welcome, Dr. Morrison.
Thank you, and thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for coming here today. So, to get started, I guess we should start with the basics. So how do you define obesity, and how does it differ from being overweight?
In adults, there's a fairly easy way of defining it. They base it on something called the body mass index that's calculated mm-hmm. from the height and weight. And there's levels of 25, over 25 is overweight, and over 30 is obese. In kids, we can't do that, because when you have growth across the age span from mm-hmm. the time you're born until you finish growing, the BMI naturally increases. And so we use a percentile to define overweight and obesity in clinical care, mm-hmm. so that if your body mass index for a child is over the 85th percentile, that's overweight, and if it's over the 95th percentile, then we consider that a classification of obesity.
Okay. And so we all kind of hear things about obesity being very bad, dangerous. What kind of diseases is it associated with later in life?
In adulthood, we have known for a long time that being obese increases your risk of the development of heart disease, of diabetes, and more recently, we've also known that it also increases your risk of developing cancer. So the really big disorders that we treat in our society in adulthood, we used to think that kids were protected against developing those, but have recently found that that, in fact, is not true. We've seen rising rates of type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm. which is the type of diabetes that is related to obesity in the pediatric age group. But we also see high blood pressure. We see abnormal cholesterol levels, and we see something called prediabetes in a very large proportion of the children that we see in clinic. Mm. In a study that we did here, about one in five of the children that we see already have prediabetes, and that's kids anywhere from aged five to age 17. So we're very concerned about what that holds for those kids as they move mm-hmm. Into adulthood. There's one study. You can imagine doing long-term studies takes a long time mm-hmm. and is very expensive. But we have one study that started back in the 70s, and it followed teenage children. It measured all of their cardiovascular risk factors. That's the word that we give to things like abnormal cholesterol and high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And then they followed them into adulthood up to a maximum of 48 years of age. And the kids who had those risk factors together with obesity as teenagers had a 14-fold increase in having
Wow.
A cardiovascular event. That means they actually had a heart attack before they turned 48. So for all of us who deal in the pediatric age group, we're really concerned that we're doing what we can to send our kids into adulthood, if you will, as healthy as they can be. And that's really what we focus on in the clinic.
Wow. Okay, so I guess we know that rates of childhood obesity are on the rise. Are children starting to become more overweight at a younger age also?
Yeah, in fact, that's probably one of the most disturbing things. You mentioned in your introduction that the rates are continuing to rise. In the United States, there's been a bit of a suggestion that maybe in teenagers the rates have stabilized. I mean, they're very high, still over a third of teenagers are overweight or obese in the U.S., but what has been most concerning is that the preschool age children, that's the children from 2 to 5, are actually having a rising or increasing prevalence and continuing to do so. And that is unfortunately also very true here in Canada.
Mm. Okay, so as a researcher, what do you think are the major determinants or factors that are contributing to this rise in childhood obesity?
Well, I think what we have to do is really think about how did we live 50 years ago and how do we live today?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, you'll see a few things that come to light. The first is that from a physical activity perspective, we've done everything in our power to engineer physical activity out of our daily lives. We use remote controls to turn on our televisions. We watch television. We spend a lot of time in front of computers and on Facebook. And we tend not to walk to the store or ride our bikes to the store. We tend to drive our cars, and our societies have been set up that really the easiest way to get around is to drive a car. And all of those things on the activity side have meant that we have much lower physical activity. Flip that over to the other side of the energy balance, so not what energy you're putting out, but what energy you're taking in, and think about what we've done on the nutrition side. We have far more processed food than we used to have. We eat out much more often than we used to. And when we eat out, the portion sizes in restaurants, it's fascinating to see, even at the fast food restaurants, that the portion sizes have nearly tripled over the last 25 to 30 years. And when we don't have home ec classes, many of us make our decisions about, so what is a healthy portion size for us based on what we get served in a restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
And the restaurant meals are actually proper portion sizes for 2 or 3 people, not for one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, even multiplied when you're dealing with young children as opposed to adults.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done a really good job of setting up society so that we're going to become obese. In fact, there's a saying amongst researchers and clinicians that the normal people are those who are becoming obese in this environment, because we have introduced it in such a way that really low physical activity and high food intake is the norm, and that maybe we should be studying the people who are managing to maintain themselves as slim and trying to understand what are they doing to combat this environment that we've created for ourselves.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about changes in lifestyle, diet, and exercise. Is there any role for genetic factors in this?
Yeah, and you asked, but that's a very good question. And we know that obesity runs in families, and the difficult question's always been, well, how much of that is the family's environment and how much are the genes? And we know that from studies of twins that have been raised in separate households, that about 50%, somewhere between 40 and 60% of obesity is a result of your genes. So that leaves another sort of 50 to 60% that is to do with the environment. And it's almost, therefore, an even split. The whole idea of what maybe makes that more interesting, though, is some recent data that tells us that actually, beginning from when the mom is pregnant, her health, her physical activity, her nutrition, and whether or not she has diabetes or smokes cigarettes has a huge impact on the subsequent health of her offspring.
Oh,
so
wow.
Not just when they're born, but we know that, for example, if moms have diabetes in pregnancy, that their offspring, as they go through childhood, have a much higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And I was just at the Canadian Diabetes Association meeting last week, and one of the researchers there, Dr. Dabilia from Colorado, is estimating that about 47% of the new cases of type 2 diabetes in childhood is a result of maternal diabetes and exposure in utero. So that's a very interesting area, a very hot area for research right now, is trying to understand what are these mechanisms that are, you know, why does smoking in the mom when she's pregnant increase the risk of her offspring having obesity? And we're not quite there yet. We think it might have to do with something called epigenetics, which is similar to genetics, but is related to changes in the gene. Not all the genes, obviously, are always the same. And so the expression of genes can vary, and that is influenced by something called epigenetics that might be the secret to what's going on in utero.
That's very interesting.
It's very exciting, actually.
Yeah, new areas for research in the future.
Yeah, we have a big study here in Hamilton. It's called the Family Study. And Dr. Kun Teo, who's an adult cardiologist, is the principal investigator on that study. And I'm one of the co-investigators. And what we're doing, we've recruited 900 families, and we recruited them when the moms were pregnant. And we're now following them into their preschool and early childhood years to look at exactly those questions. What are the things in the mom, in the dad, and in the baby that are contributing to whether they develop obesity or high blood pressure as they get older?
Okay, great. So I guess what you're saying is we really have to consider influences that start right at the very beginning and not only in early childhood, adolescence, kind of all the way through.
Absolutely. And I think beginning at the beginning is I guess, always a good thing to do, but particularly so when we think about obesity. And we think that babies and particularly preschool kids' behaviors are much more malleable than might be true of a teenager who's already had a certain habit for 15 years, that if you can introduce physical activity, healthy eating, good portion size early in life, that has a very good chance of continuing as the children get older.
So you conducted a study, I think, with preschool children, and you found that parents of overweight children seem to be aware of the role of nutrition and exercise in obesity, and yet we still see that the rates of obesity are continuing to rise. So what do you see there as the difference? Where is the change between knowledge and action?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think parents of preschool kids, as well as probably every adult you would speak to, would know that they should be physically active and they should eat healthy. But all the research tells us that the vast majority of us are not doing that. And that raises that question as to why we're not doing it. And there's a lot of that's where we come back to this concept of the environment, and that we've been programmed from very, very early in the origins of humanity that food was really important, and it was really important to make sure that we had enough energy stored. And so we've been programmed to eat when there's food available. And unfortunately, that continues where food is available everywhere. I heard a lecture recently where he said we were programmed to eat when the mastodon was available, but now we have mastodons on every corner. And that's really one of the key issues that we have difficulty challenging as people. We know what we should do, but we're not always so good at making those changes because it requires an every single day change. The second reason is that a lot of parents do not see their children as being overweight or obese. And one of a pediatric resident did some work with me up in the northern communities in Ontario, and there were very few parents of overweight children, 15% only, who recognized their child as being overweight. So when you think about that issue, you realize that if you don't see your child as having a health issue, there may not be those triggers. Boy, I really should be focusing on their physical activity and on their nutrition. As pediatricians and as family doctors and frankly, anybody who's involved in public health, our messages need to be, from the time mom's pregnant, the importance of healthy, balanced diet, appropriate amounts, and physical activity every day. Mm-hmm. And I know it might get boring to hear, but we need to really continue to get that message across.
Of course, yeah. So you mentioned some societal factors that kind of influence perceptions about obesity. And I found it interesting that Canada is ranked 27th out of 29 OECD nations on childhood obesity. So that's pretty poor. So why do you think Canada in particular is doing such a poor job at managing obesity?
I wish I had the answer to that question, because I'm not entirely sure I do. I will say a couple of things. I think the first is part of it reflects the very high prevalence of overweight and obesity we have in Canada. Not too dissimilar from the U.S., not mm-hmm. quite as bad as the United States, but we've had a bit of a tendency to pat ourselves on the back that we're doing better than them, not necessarily comparing how we're doing to other countries in the world where we're doing not as well. Uh-huh. And I also think that there's really, amongst society, there's the belief or the understanding that this is a parental fault, that those parents have messed up those kids by feeding them too much and not getting them to exercise. And I honestly don't believe that that blame game is going to help us. I mm-hmm. think if we were to really sit down and look at the societal and environmental issues of the world that we've created and try and figure out how we can promote health in that world, we would take more steps forward. And that requires every level, and from me as an individual, as a mom, as a doctor, as a mother in a school environment, to express that to people, as well mm-hmm. as to express it to people in government and in public health, that this is not just your health ministry that should be focusing on this. This needs to be transportation and mm-hmm. the whole business industry and around food availability, fresh food availability, the cost mm-hmm. of fresh food. A lot of those issues have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. So sounds like this is really a problem that involves pretty much everyone in society. You have healthcare practitioners, teachers, public health officials, family members, parents. Who do you think plays the most important role in influencing these matters?
That's a tough one, because when I sit in clinic, I sit with the parents. So I think that parents do have an important role, and mm-hmm. I think that they do have tools that we can hopefully provide them to kind of go against society. But I firmly believe that if we are not able to change society, to encourage people to ride their bikes to work or to walk to work, to walk to the store, kids to walk to school. I mean, mm-hmm. you drive around any elementary or high school and you will see cars lined up down the road first thing in the morning and the mm-hmm. end of the day. And I'm not sure why that's happened. Part of it is a concern about safety, but it's also a mentality, and that's what we really need to work at reversing. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody actually really does have a role, and from the teachers who kind of say, well, I don't really want to go out and do recess, I don't feel like walking around, mm-hmm. to think about the messages that we're conveying to the kids who are looking up to us mm-hmm. is a really important thing for all of us to think about.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about school, I know there's been kind of movements recently to promote more healthy alternatives in school, vending machines and things like that. Do you think that's really helping the situation?
Yeah, I actually think it's a really good idea. And I think it's a good idea because I think that the school is the one place where we as a society have our kids go. And if the message that we give them for that place that we're looking after collectively, you can eat junk food all day long and that's okay, we're making a mistake. We're already giving not a great message by only having 1 year of phys ed, for example, mandatory through mm-hmm. high school. That was every year when I was, it's not that long ago, when I was going to high school. So I think that we've got to be very conscious of those messages we're sending. other people say, oh, well, that's not going to fix obesity. And I agree with you 100%. Just putting healthy food into the school is not going to be a cure for obesity for all of the reasons that I've already talked about. Mm-hmm. But we each have to take one step, and maybe it's a small step to start with, just to get those messages across. And, mm-hmm. you know, you think about somebody like Jamie Oliver with his healthy food in the schools. Right. And, I mean, that's become a huge hit in the UK. And to get kids kind of turned on to what is healthy food. You don't have mm-hmm. to tell them that it's healthy food. You tell them that it's awesome food. Mm-hmm. And then you make sure that you're cooking it in a healthy way. And I think that teenagers in particular are quite aware of those messages. And we just need to show them that it's not that difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. Good. So I guess from a practical standpoint here in the city of Hamilton, are there any kind of programs or initiatives that are addressing this issue?
Yeah, the city of Hamilton actually has been quite proactive on this, and there's a group several years ago started a strategy to encourage healthy active living here in the city, and they were to commend them. A cross section from the school boards, the public health, as well as industry. And one of the things I thought they did that was really good is they introduced champions. So they had champions in different parts of our society to sort of get that message out there. Mm-hmm. They are working on bike paths and trying to make them a little more connected. Anybody who rides a bike will know that there are bike paths, but yeah. they tend to be somewhat disjointed uh-huh. and not terrific. And so things are getting better, I think, in that respect. At least it's recognized that there needs to be efforts along that line. Mm-hmm. The school boards were quite involved, of course, now with the province coming down and saying you need to have healthy food in the schools. And how do they actually do that was being addressed. It was quite a broad spectrum of things that they were targeting and programs they were introducing. The community-wise are also have been quite active here in trying to encourage families to be physically active together. And I haven't talked about the whole role of the family when we treat children, but we really encourage that the behaviors that we're trying to introduce are not just to be introduced for the patient, but really for everybody in the family, mm-hmm. even if there are kids in the family who are not heavy, because we don't ever recommend very low-calorie diets or anything along that line. We focus very much on a healthy, balanced diet mm-hmm. and lots of physical activity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in terms of just things that parents and families and kids can do at home, you mentioned maintaining kind of more of a balanced diet, promoting exercise. Is there any other simple things that
Yeah, probably
can
some
do?
Of the key ones, especially with teenagers, they like to get up late and they don't have time for breakfast. Mm. And one of the things that we find is one of the better predictors of overweight is not having breakfast in the morning.
Okay.
And that might be counterintuitive because you think, well, if I skip a meal, that should be better.
Yeah.
But most of us tend to overeat. So that's one of them. In young children, sleep is very important. It's also important in teenagers. And we know that individuals who are not getting enough sleep tend to overeat. And we don't really know why, but we know that that's true. So focusing on the sleep hygiene, if you will, from early on in life is important. And I guess the third one that I try to encourage families to do, besides sort of the general physical activity mm-hmm. and healthy eating, is to challenge themselves to have at least one serving of fruit and vegetable at every meal. In fact, every time they eat. And because most of us should be eating often, we should be having three meals and at least two snacks a day. That gets in your five or six for fruit and vegetable. Most of the kids in my clinic come in with maybe one or two servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And we know that low servings of fruits and vegetables is a predictor of obesity.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is probably around the screen time. We used to just talk about television, and it kind of was easy to say, well, you know, you're limited to sort of an hour and a half, two shows or one show or whatever a day. And I find that the young people with the screen time, with being on Facebook, they are glued to their computers for lengths of time that they really are not aware of. If you ask them, they'll say, oh, I'm probably half an hour or an hour a day, where in fact, if you had a little camera watching them, mm-hmm. we're probably up 3, 4, 5 hours a day. So trying to really focus on limiting that time to less than a couple of hours a day. Mm. And we used to say, well, you know, schoolwork was okay, but and you guys probably work this way too. If anybody watches the way a teenager does schoolwork, inevitably there's five other things going on at the same time. Yeah. You know, they might be watching something on YouTube or they've got their favorite TV show on and they're chatting and they're doing everything at the same time. So I tend to encourage them to keep the mm-hmm. homework to just homework.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm winning that game just yet.
Well, thank you. Those are some great tips and messages for the public. Just to close up here, so tonight is Halloween, and I was just wondering, personally, are you going to be handing out candy at your door, or what do you do on Halloween?
I love handing out the candy, actually. I like to see the little ones come up at the door. And yes, I am handing out candy. I think the message needs not to be that you should never have treats, but that they should be in moderation. And so I usually give out the little Nestle's chocolate bars. That's a nice small portion size that mm-hmm. moms can give them as a treat once or twice, a couple times a week. You can put them away, put them in the freezer, put them in the basement or mm-hmm. or somewhere so they're not always in sight. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that having treats every now and then is not a bad thing. In fact, to restrict them completely is probably going to be a losing battle.
That's a great message. Okay, so we're out of time, but thank you so much, Dr. Morrison. It was a pleasure having you here today.
Great. It's delightful to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I got a lust for life. Dangerous mind. My trail of dust. Who knows what you'll find? I can take a tree and tear it from its roots. Call me the bum.